From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Come to the Party by Frances Garfield. Dusk was fast overcoming the autumn twilight. Nora felt no closer to Steve Thomas's country house than they'd been half an hour earlier. She snuggled closer to Big Jeff in the back seat and tried to see the road ahead. The headlights bravely probed the path, but the darkness seemed to nestle nearer and gloomier to either side. Willie in the front seat beside Sam bent her ginger head above a crude penciled map, which the four had begun to fear was false. "Steve just doesn't know how to draw maps," Willie half moaned, and he promised to put up signals to show where to turn off into his private road. Why ever did I pick a publisher who throws his parties on the far side of nowhere? "But my dear, this publisher picked you out," reminded silver-haired Sam at the wheel. "A dozen others turned you down." "Please, why bring that up?" Willie appealed, but he went on. Here was Steve with his little regional publishing house, pretty much on the far side of nowhere itself, a county away. Regional, and he wanted a regional novel for the Christmas trade. And he liked yours very much. And here we are on our way to cheer you on while you autograph 1,000 or so flyleaves. Sam loved his writer, wife, and showed it by his teasing. Nora knew he smiled his special smile of affection and amusement, blue eyes slanted and twinkling. "He said there might be a dozen guests," protested Willie. "He said he'd invited some special friends who might like my book and buy it, and tell all their friends, so they'd buy it too, for Christmas gifts. Word-of-mouth advertising," Steve called it. "Yes, cheaper than published advertising," remarked Sam. "There's that little white church again," said Jeff, big and trying to sound cheerful. "How many times have we passed it? 3? Or maybe 4? 4, I'm sure," put in Nora. "And there's a little gray house that keeps following us." "Damn," said Sam. "This curve looming ahead is boringly familiar. We seem to be in orbit." A grotesquely painted van charged into the glare of headlights, squarely in the center of the road. Sam cursed and wrenched the wheel. The car swayed into the grassy shoulder. The tremendous van shot past, its driver goggling out, blocky white teeth gleaming from a dark thicket of beard. Then he was gone, and Sam twisted back onto the road. "Whew," gasped Willie. "Thank God you were driving, Sam, not me." Nora tossed her thick black hair out of her eyes. Her hand tingled where Jeff had gripped it so powerfully. She could still see that staring, shaggy face. "It'll be a great party if we ever get there," she said in a feeble attempt at humor. "Look, isn't that the church again?" "I wonder if anybody will find the place," ventured Willie. "Pessimist," chuckled Sam. He loved everything about Willie, including her novel about a woman's passion for both her husband and her husband's brother. Nora had overheard a neighbor woman ask Sam which of the characters he was supposed to be. "A little of both," he had said with a perfectly straight face, slant blue eyes twinkling as usual. "There'll be people there, all right," promised burly Jeff. "And Nora and I are here to give you moral support, Willie." He, too, admired the book, had helped Willie read proof on it. The four were close friends, always enjoyed each other, never bored together. "That van looks better behind us than in front of us," said Sam. "Maybe he's lost here, too, rolling round and round. Look, a mist is coming up." An owl hooted in the distance, strangely loud and clear above the motor's purr. No houses showed now, only great twisted trees, crowded at the sides of the road. branches laced overhead. Willie gave a sudden, happy squeak. "Look! A bit of tinsel on a post," she cried. "That's bound to be Steve's signal." "And a driveway just past us," said Sam, turning deftly. "A long one, too." They followed turns, rises and falls in the bumpy road. Dark thickets massed to right and left. They heard nothing, no sound but the motor. Nora saw a grotesquely hunched tree that reminded her of a cedar of Lebanon she remembered from Winchester Cathedral. Weird. "Turn there," directed Willie, pointing ahead. And Sam turned. "Geez, how well you obey, Willie," laughed Nora. "One word from me, and Jeff does the exact opposite." Jeff said nothing. He stared out of the window, lips clamped. His cheek had a taut crease where there should be a dimple. Sam bumped the car over the coarse, outflung roots of a great oak and stopped on the tall grass. Ahead of them showed a great, bleakly drab house. Wavering lights from the tall windows tinted the dim evening. A broad chimney rose in the dusk, climbed the side wall. Large pillars rose along a wide porch. "Okay," Jeff touched Nora's shoulder, and she felt his great hand tremble. "Let's go on in." Willie smoothed her cap of ginger curls and freshened her lipstick. Nora shook her long dark hair and moved to follow Jeff. "Odd," she said. "I don't see any other cars." "They've probably been and gone," joked Sam, coming along behind with Willie. "It took us long enough to find the place." They mounted the steps. A dark, heavy door loomed. Sam swung the huge knocker, and the door opened. "Come in, come in," came a booming voice. They went in. The man at the door was outrageously handsome, blonde and tall, dressed in a tuxedo, shirt front all foamy with lace, self-consciously cordial. "Glad you came," he greeted them. "We had some problems," said Nora. "Where's Steve?" "Oh, never mind Steve for a moment. My name's Patrick. Come on in and join the crowd." The hubbub inside was unbelievable. Nora took hold of Jeff's coat, seeking reassurance. For what reason she didn't know. They had come into a huge, swarming room, a multitude of bodies. All kinds. Tall, thin, short, fat. Every one of them completely strange to her. Maybe Willie knew some of them, she thought. They could be part of Steve's publishing company. She stepped back to let Willie lead the way. "Keep straight ahead," Patrick advised from behind. He was dismayingly handsome, and Nora speculated for a moment whether his hair had been permanent. "Food and drink over there," he smiled. "You'll find some friends there, probably." "With my sort of friends, that's just where I'll find them," said Jeff, grinning now. The four wove in and out among packed groups. Everybody was talking to everybody else, and nobody seemed to notice them. A dull red fire glowed on a broad hearth, but did not seem to send out any heat. Several extremely thin men stood there, and listened to a grossly heavy man. His face was bearded, toothy. Nora remembered the driver of that killer van. High along an inner wall ran a balcony. Faces looked down, the faces, perhaps, of children. One nod on what might have been a chicken wing. "It's positively unreal," Nora whispered to Jeff, and it was. They seemed to walk through people as though people dissolved from in front of them. "My imagination's going haywire," she said, and squeezed his hand for comfort. Willie's brilliant, curly head had led the way to a butler's pantry. It, too, thronged with people, filling trays with barbecued chicken, cold-cut sliced cheese. Baskets of crackers and little cakes sat here and there. In the midst of everything, a gigantic glass bowl of rosy liquid. "Pink wine," whispered Sam, crinkling his nose, "the cheapest." For a moment, they thought they saw Steve Thomas's beautiful wife balancing an empty tray towards a rear door, perhaps the kitchen. "Hey, Florence," Willie called out, but whoever it was didn't turn. She vanished so abruptly they couldn't be sure if they'd seen her. Sam picked up a plate and piled it high with salad and meat. "Let's dig in," he said. "That bride would give a skeleton an appetite. I'll even try this sorry wine. It's not worthy of Steve. Or is it? I think he outdid himself this time. "There's M. Selden, there by the fireplace," said Nora to Jeff.
"Where?"
"No, she's gone. Maybe it wasn't M. Anyway, let's stick together. What a strange bunch of people." As she spoke, she thought she heard singing somewhere. A radio, a record player, it died away as she wondered.
"Look," said Willie, putting down her plate.
"At the end of the hall, it looks like Patrick's summoning me. I better go see. Maybe it's time for me to autograph some books." Briskly, she headed for the long hallway, striding fast on green high-heeled sandals and swinging the skirt of her flowered green dress. There were chairs lining the hall. They seemed to be heaped with mink coats. Nora heard her murmur as she left. None of Steve's authors could afford those. Nora chewed on a strangely tasteless slice of sausage as she watched Willie out of sight. I hope she sells enough books to make this trip worthwhile.
"You're not having fun?" worried Sam.
"That means you aren't happy either." Nora looked from platter to platter.
"What happened to the chicken wings? They're my favorite food."
"If I had a pair of chicken wings, I might just fly out of here," said Jeff. Nora laughed, but Jeff didn't join her. The crowd had grown thicker, noisier. The air seemed damped and close. It had a smell like a room full of old clothes. Sam frowned and brushed back his silver hair.
"Let's go somewhere quiet," he said.
"How about up on the balcony with the kids?" suggested Nora.
But the balcony seemed empty, lost in dark shadows. Maybe a hint of movement, or maybe not.
"How much of this putrid wine did you drink, Jeff?" asked Sam.
"No more than I could help. I hope Willie's in our element autographing books."
"I'm going to go see," said Sam. He moved towards the hallway where Willie had vanished. The crowd let him through without seeming to make way.
"At least Steve had the sense to stay away from his own party," growled Jeff.
"Look there in the corner. Isn't that Genevieve and Joe?"
Nora appeared. "Let's go see."
They pressed their way through a huddle of people who made a path for them. Nobody looked familiar, except against the far wall, the bearded van driver. The voices, all S's and all loud, hurt their ears. The air thickened and was hard to breathe.
"Here we are," said Jeff, reaching a corner.
But nobody stood there. Nobody. Only a flicker from the fireplace that did not seem to give off heat.
"I'll be damned," Jeff muttered.
"Do we have a single friend in this room?"
They looked around. Halfway across the room drifted a face, wan as lemon custard, peering from under the brim of a worn, shapeless felt hat. The body seemed lost in foggy darkness. They imagined a long black captain. Behind him, or it, their grimace, the bearded driver.
"Jeff," said Nora, "I don't like it here."
"It's just that you don't know anybody," said Jeff, but his dimples did not show.
"But you're right. The whole thing's a crashing bore.
Let me go check with Willie and Sam. Maybe we can sneak out if they're through."
"Yes, go look for them," Nora tried to smile.
"I'll be right back." Away he tramped, huge among the others. She watched him into the hallway between the piled fur coats, watched his dark head disappear. Then she stood alone, nobody noticing her, nobody talking to her. She felt dull, sticky, as though she hung in a mass of warm jelly. Haze crawled in the air of the crowded room. It smelled not like tobacco, not like that other familiar grown marijuana smell. Nora did not belong there. She knew it. She hadn't been invited, really. She and Jeff had only come with Willie and Sam for moral support. She wished they had stayed at home, or wished anyway she had gone along with Jeff to find the others.
"I'll follow them," she said to herself. "Follow them? Maybe they're ready to go."
The hallway seemed to narrow as she entered. Those piles of furs closed in around her. Maybe the little white rabbit in the Alice book had felt closed in like that, and the hallway was shadow-barred, with open doorways shedding light along the sides. Nora looked in at a door. Music seeped out. Something in there like a little old-fashioned organ. It seemed to be playing all by itself, a tune like a hymn, but dissonant, repelling. Voices echoed through the next doorway. Nora went there.
"Come in," somebody called. "We've been waiting."
A man in a very dark suit put out a very white hand to her. His chalky face grinned with dark, narrow teeth. His hand was clammy as it touched hers.
"Come in," he said again.
Staring past him, she saw dull, paneled walls, a hanging lamp that sprouted a shaky flame, a closely drawn knot of people. They too wore dark clothes, tight fitted to gaunt bodies. They seemed to have faces of pale clay. Their eyes looked little and beady. They spoke from thick red lips, unintelligibly. But on the floor lay three other instantly recognizable. A bit of green cloth. Jeff's great limp body. The red curls of Willie, the silver hair of Sam. None of them moved.
"Come in," a chorus bidding.
All hands rose toward her, beckoning. Nora screamed thinly and whirled to run. Run anywhere away from that little room. Anywhere. A door stood at the end of the hallway. Escape. That was all she could think of. She gasped strangingly. At the door she clawed for the knob. She strove hard against the panel, and the door grumbled open. She filled her lungs with fresh air. Somehow, miraculously, she was outside. Where to go? It didn't matter. Only get away. She ran in the dark night, stumbling over the heavy, coiled roots of trees, tearing her sheer hose. A slipper came off, and desperately she kicked the other away. She kept running. Stones hurt her bare feet, biting painfully at her ankles. A mockingbird sang, strangely comforting. She was escaping, away from that house. A broad open lawn loomed ahead of her. A beautiful house, standing tall and proud against sentimental pines. She floundered to one knee, dragged herself up again, and to the door, beating at it with her fists.
"Why, Nora!"
There stood Steve Thomas, opening to her. Steve was slim, impeccable. His curled black hair was carefully groomed, a smile was on his face.
"For heaven's sake, where have you been? Where are the others?"
She flung herself into his arms, and he held her close to quiet her trembling. "Where are they?" he asked again.
"I don't know," she chattered. "I saw them on the floor, over there at your party."
"What are you talking about?"
She fought her choking sobs. "Over in that big house, right over there."
"My God, Nora, there hasn't been a house there for years." Steve held her closer. "You're imagining things. No house. It burnt down long before I came here."
Burnt down?
"I've heard a crazy story. A bunch of far-out people who had a belief of some sort about human sacrifice, and one night when they celebrated it, lightning struck and burned a place to the ground with everybody inside."
"But, look, Nora, there's nothing there. Nothing whatever."
Nora made herself look. There was nothing there. Nothing whatever.